This is CliffCentral.com.
Richard, are we on track with the financial pack for my presentation to the board next week?
Well, hopefully. The team's very short-staffed, and it's taking such a long time to find a suitable financial manager for the division. We're way behind on all our forecasts and reporting.
Why don't you speak to the finance team? They're a consultancy that can help you with an experienced interim financial manager. You can have somebody to help you almost immediately. They'll hit the ground running with no long-term contracts and no upfront placement fees.
Go to thefinanceteam.co.za.
Welcome to the practical business section of our business masterclass. I'm Richard Angus, CEO of the finance team, your part-time financial executive solution. Joining me in studio today is Safia Boulay of New Habits, Making Shift Happen. Last week, sorry, Safia, I should normally give you a gap there. Welcome
with
us. No gap today. Sorry. Welcome with us, Safs. Last week, we spoke to Gordon Tebogo, founder of Tractor, talking to us about their sales management tool for FMCGs that want to sell their or market their brands into the informal economy in traditional spas or shops and the likes. That was a really, really interesting conversation about how the economy, that whole, it was a follow-on from the access versus ownership conversation, and just how the new age economy is shifting. Today, we have two interesting entrepreneurs with us. Okay, first, we have Vuyokazi Numvalu, if I got that right, transaction executive of RH Bupelo, a special purpose acquisition company with interests in the healthcare sector. And then Lebo
Letswalo.
Okay, got that. Lebo Letswalo of Moorish Cuisine Catering, 100% black woman-owned catering company. Mm-hmm. So, ladies, we're going to be talking a little bit about your businesses and yourselves, both of you with very interesting stories of how you've got to where you've got to. Well, I'm going to start with you, if I may. Tell us a little bit about the company that you work with, and then a little bit more about where it started and how it got to where it is, and then I'm going to ask Lebo to give us the same sort of process.
Okay, thank you very much, Richard. RH Bupelo is essentially a special purpose acquisition company with interest in healthcare. And basically what a special purpose acquisition company is a type of investment fund which actually allows the public the public investors to be able to invest in a private equity type of investments. So how it started is that we listed this company this year on the 12th of July 2017.
So you listed on the JSE?
Yes, we listed on the JSE. So what we had to do is we had to raise capital for about 500 million.
A small number in today's
It is actually
world.
A big number.
What did you say?
500 million. Trust 500 me, million. If you've ever had to do...
That's a lot of noughts.
Yeah, I was going to say that's a number of new noughts on your bank balance. It's a big ask in today's day and age to raise 500 million. Let the listener be taken lightly. Hey? Yes.
It definitely is a big ask, and I think what actually helped us is that the team that we have has been in the healthcare industry for a while, for I think about 6 years collectively, and we started with a fund that is not listed, which is RH Managers. So we've been doing healthcare infrastructure for about the past 3 years, which actually gave result to the listing of RH Bupelo, which basically focuses on the brownfield and the acquisition. So we're acquiring operational assets.
Okay, Lebo, tell us a little bit about Moorish Cuisine Catering and where you started.
Thanks, Richard. So my company is 8 years old, and primarily we cater, excuse the pun, we do cater to corporates. And by that I mean we provide food for, you know, your normal exco meetings, staff events, as well as the provision and management of canteens, staff restaurants. So that's what, in a nutshell, we do.
Okay. So
that's a big kind of concern. Lots of moving parts.
Lots of moving parts. Give us some examples of some of your clients, if we can ask you to list some of them.
So currently we're running the canteen of Fluor South Africa. We have in the past run two other corporates' canteens. And we do have quite a lot of, I guess, blue chip companies on our portfolio, you know, the likes of Samsung, GSK, Mvula Trust, so many different companies, but that's now on the, you know, ad hoc catering side. Yes.
Okay, so ladies, two very different industry spaces, but I'm seeing two very successful black women entrepreneurs seated here in front of me in studio. Let's talk a little bit about your stories. Okay, so I'm going to ask you to go first. Tell us a little bit about, I read a little bit about your background and was intrigued with what I learned. So tell us your life story in the next few minutes. Tell us a little bit about you, where you come from, how that grew to being a transactor at RM.
Okay. So I grew up in a village called Mvukazi in Mzumkulu, which is in KZN.
Mm-hmm.
I moved to Joburg in 95 when I was about 12 years old to actually pursue my studies. So I finished my matric in Johannesburg and then considered pursuing my studies to be a chartered accountant, which was largely influenced by the people around me. So in that period, I actually stayed with my uncle, who is also an accountant, and I guess that's what informed my decision to become a CA. Mm. And you would know that growing up in a village, you're actually not exposed to a whole lot of opportunities. The only opportunities that you probably know of is being a teacher or a nurse, which my mom is a teacher, and that's about the only thing I know. But I guess I was lucky and blessed in a sense that I had an uncle who had actually done something different. And then I came to Joburg. I registered with UNISA to study my degree, which I had to do part-time. So I registered for BCom Accounting, which took me about 4 years because I was starting part-time, and I also had to work at Truett's to supplement the income and actually supplement, paying for my varsity fees, since I actually didn't have sufficient funds to do it. But in all of that, I think I had a bit of support in terms of my friends that had money to go to varsity, and they were actually attending university at a regular basis than I did. So they helped me with the questions and everything else, and actually we worked together right up until when I qualified as a chartered accountant. So I did my articles at PwC.
Okay.
Qualified in 2009. But I think when I qualified, that's when I realized that auditing is not essentially the thing that I like doing. Then
running in after the war and bayoneting the wounded. Okay,
exactly.
Yes.
Then I decided to venture out, and investments has always been interesting for me. I joined the IDC, where I think I learned a lot of the deal making that I know.
Mm-hmm.
And when you work with the IDC, it's actually different from all the commercial banks, because you most of the time you get all the businesses where the commercial banks have decided, no, we're not spending our money on that. So you need to actually look at those businesses and make them work and assist the entrepreneurs with their dreams. And it was always a challenge in a sense that the entrepreneur comes and they're always very optimistic. And when you actually have to look at their businesses and try and adjust the numbers that they're giving you, it was always a challenge. But I think I learned a lot from that. And after 5 years of being at the IDC, that's when I decided I needed a change. And I joined Arage Managers, a fund that was started in August 2014, which focuses on healthcare infrastructure as well. But the difference between that one and Arage Wupilo is that Arage Managers focuses on the greenfield infrastructure, just developing the licenses that all the doctors have out there. So that's my story in a nutshell.
In a nutshell. In a nutshell, you make it sound so, so simple.
I also spend a lot of hours working for Truworths to get my degree going.
Yeah, and that's not an easy thing, eh? The hours of standing there.
Yeah. Lebo, tell us about your story.
You know, listening to Vuyo, I think we've got very similar beginnings. I'm also from a very small town called Namakhale, in Phalaborwa. And when I matriculated, I came to Joburg to study as well. So I went to then RAU. So I did BCom Accounting. I also harbored fantasies about being a CA.
Mm-hmm.
And I think towards the end of my studies, I realized that no, this was not for me. But I continued still torturing myself in the finance stream, you know, so much so that I did pursue a postgraduate degree in financial planning. And I did work at one of the financial planning firms and proceeded to work in banking for many years. Mm-hmm. So as it was interesting hearing what Andrew was saying earlier about, you know, the the sales teams, and that was my life for a long time. I was a relationship manager in a bank, mm-hmm. and I looked after many companies, many commercial entities and government entities as well. But what was always clear, I think, for me from a very early age, I've always known what I was passionate about, and that was food. That was making food, you know. If there was a function, whether at home or at a friend's, I was just always that girl that just volunteers herself to be cooking, to be doing the arrangements. And I knew that, you know, this is it for me. I need to find ways to make this a business. But I think, you know, the moment of truth must have come when I was at varsity. And I used to hate the food. I think I must have lost something like 15 kilograms from the food that was being served. It was just horrible. And, you know, let alone that you're so far away far away from home, you know, you're missing home, you're missing your mom's mm-hmm. cooking, and now you're being subjected to eating this horrible food. So I knew then that, you know, something has to give.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look, I must say, I'm an extremely spoiled person. My children call my wife Mommy Nigella, so I'm extremely spoilt. I have a wife with an excellent cooking skill set, and I can appreciate the fact that, yeah, you just, you know, this food that gets put in front of you at an establishment, you kind of look at this and you go, yeah, no thanks.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm sort of stuck on the I volunteered part.
Yeah.
I used to think that was the worst torture ever.
Yeah.
I'm glad I'm not the only one who feels that way.
I think it's maybe because you work at Truworths.
Yeah, I think so. Okay,
so it's the Truworths team and the food team. Okay, so ladies, two very different industries. Okay, however, growing up and interestingly, I mean, both from small villages, coming mm-hmm. through the accounting stream. Sorry, Sophia, the accountant's rule here, 3-1. Coming through the accounting stream. And yet then, and going to very diverse industries. But the question I want to ask you is challenges that are facing women in the industries in which you operate. I mean, you know, these are not industries that are, well, I guess you could say that catering, I guess, is slightly in the woman direction. But even, you know, and healthcare, you could argue nurses. And that. But the reality is these are two very, very hard industries to operate in. Okay, they're not the, let's call it, the milk and honey stuff. Just give me some insights as women entrepreneurs operating in the space, and particularly black women entrepreneurs operating in the space. What are some of the, let's call them, industry challenges that face women in your industries? What do you see out there, Lebo, from your side? What do you see?
So with catering, yes, there's a lot of, I mean, there's thousands of catering companies out there. But given the stream or, you know, the focus that I chose earlier on, which is, you know, catering to corporates, that was difficult because you usually get stereotyped to being the funeral caterer or the wedding caterer. So I didn't want that because I wanted a little bit more sustainability and, you know, that just knowing where I was going to get my money from. And that's why I focus on the corporates. But, you know, breaking into the corporate glass, as it were, it's really, really difficult. Because unlike government, my experience has been that government is mandated or compelled to advertise openly, publicly, any business opportunities that are available for entrepreneurs. Mm. So with corporates, really, you know, they work on a lot of bidding, closed bidding processes. So you have to be known. You have to be in the circle, you know, for you to be invited to bid and to partake in the RFPs that do come up. So, you know, there was a lot of having to go out and market myself and prove myself that I know what I'm talking about. You know, to ask somebody to entrust you with their staff management contract is not an walk in the park. It's a huge risk. It's a huge responsibility. So it did take a lot, for me to clench that first one, which led to the second and third. So
track record is obviously really important, and I mean, you'll attest to this, particularly in the investment management space. Track record is everything.
Yes, it is.
Challenges that you've seen out there.
I think in the investment industry or private equity industry, the one biggest challenge is that it's dominated by men. So you expected to dress in a certain way, speak in a certain way as well. So if you come in as a woman, first thing is when you, let's say you get into a meeting, you walk in, you're the only woman. First, everyone will stare at you and you're thinking, is there something wrong with me or what's going on? And they actually don't listen much to you until obviously then they start working with you. They actually realize, oh, okay, maybe there's something here. We can actually listen to her. So, I mean, that goes on for a long time, even when you have the credentials and you have the qualifications and everything else that comes with your name, you actually still struggle because women are not necessarily taken that serious at the first glance. And even when they take you serious, there's still other things that come into play. For instance, they'll start looking at you. Are you married? When do you think you'll get married? Have any kids or whatever? Because I guess all of that, you know, affects the number of hours that you have to work. So there's a lot of things that you actually have to go through as a woman in that industry as well. I think it's changing now, though. There's a lot of women that we've seen coming up the ranks, and I guess it's also highly driven by the legislation as well. So,
Now, I mean, in terms of growing your respective businesses in the current climates and moving forward, I mean, you've both got very established businesses that you're involved with. How do you grow from here? You know, it's one thing to say, okay, well, we've done transactions, we've got clients. How do you grow your businesses as a black woman entrepreneur in South Africa today? How do you get that growth catalyst to work for you? Lebo?
So what I've done in my business, in July, I hired a sales rep. But, you know, she wasn't just going to be a sales rep. I was going to give her a little bit more of the farming to do because I was finding that I was getting more and more customers, you know, I started suddenly starting to become rather reactive with how I was managing my relationships. So I thought, okay, we'll put a farming mandate onto the lady and still also task her with bringing new customers. But it's a joint effort. I continue to be out there looking for customers. Yes, it is a different climate that we're working on. And remember, catering is one of those services that people think they can really cut back on. It's one of the first ones they do cut back on when suddenly the company is going through financial constraints.
That always amazes me because I thought the old adage was an army runs on its stomach. So if you want your staff to be happy, feed them properly.
Feed them properly, but you can have a meeting, you know, without food necessarily, or, you know, that big spread, you know, just keep it to some biscuits.
It's austerity measures, it's now bakers. Exactly. Bought from the local pick and pay.
Exactly, yeah.
Okay. Where's that growth going to come from?
So with our business being in the healthcare industry, if you look at the South African healthcare system, it has a whole lot of challenges. We have the three big companies, which is your Netcare, Mediclinic and Life Hospitals, that actually dominate the whole market. But the biggest problem is that we have at least 80% of the population being served by your public healthcare system, which is not efficient and under-resourced. And we've got 20% of the population being served by your big three companies. So what do we actually want to do is we want to acquire the low-end facilities and with an aim to consolidate those. Now, when we actually consolidate that, it actually allows the economies of scale. It gives all the other independent hospitals that are currently struggling a bargaining power. I mean, you can now at least be at a position where you can negotiate with medical aid schemes. You can be in a position where you can negotiate with your suppliers in terms of your procurement of medication and everything else that you need to procure. And also, you can actually try and look at putting them in the same platform in terms of your IT. So that's how we expect to extract some efficiencies there and actually grow the business, and also hope to bring the medical cost down.
Yeah. Debo's volunteering to do your catering for you.
We can technically take that.
I saw that connection.
Yes, I saw immediately.
And I think just on that, I mean, yeah, we're laughing about it here in studio, but the reality is it is the networks of business people that meet and engage that allow opportunities to flow. I mean, you, to your comment earlier of, you know, you need to go out there and find and seek, and in private enterprise, it's really, you know, you have to be invited in, so to speak. And I mean, that's the one thing that's always amazed me is how you can find yourself invited in or locked out by those relationships of the past and what's happened in the past in your company.
Yeah.
Now, I mean, just one of my, I always ask the question, I mean, what has been the biggest challenge in your business to date? So that big thing that came staring, that was staring you down at some point in the past that really made you step back and really, I guess, grit your teeth and push through it, I guess. Otherwise, you wouldn't be here today. But what was that one big challenge? Can you share that with us? Level?
There's a lot, I think.
You got a list.
Yeah, but I think for me, if I do, you know, track back, the one constant thing is it's cash flow management for a company that is growing and dealing with corporates, you know, because believe it or not, they don't also always pay as well.
I can tell you, corporate accounts are becoming increasingly more difficult to service.
Yes. So that is a challenge for a growing company because, and you know, often I find I'm faced with having to make very tough decisions where the same corporate that owes you so much money, they're continuously placing orders, you know, for you to cater to them. So that has been the biggest one, to try and manage the relationship so you don't alienate the customers. You know, you continue to build that warm and fuzzy relationship with the same client while still being firm, you know, enough to say, hey, I do need to get paid. You know, for me to keep servicing you, I need the money to flow. That has been the biggest thing. I think we're getting it right in a lot of ways. You know, I found during my journey of entrepreneurship, I've had to find my voice. It's almost like I was, I don't know, like muted. Like I could not speak out. I could not shout and say, hey, pay me. You know, that was like the single most difficult thing to do. But I've learned to ask for my money. I've learned to be asked to be paid. And I find that, you know, we're making, you know, good strides in that department.
Well, I must tell you, I'm constantly amazed at how some corporates believe that they should be funded from their smaller supplier base.
Yeah.
It just astounds me. And I mean, we've often talked about it on the show, the need for large corporates to realize that the way they support smaller growing businesses is by making sure that they pay them on time and they don't give them the runaround. And yeah, I mean, I've heard very sadly of, you know, let's call them off the books incentive systems running in corporates where people are told, you know, if you manage to delay payment by X days, we'll actually incentivize you in the payments environment, which is really scary. And that sort of thing that sort of thing starts happening. Well, what has been your biggest challenge to date? What have you seen as your biggest challenge?
I think our biggest challenge has always been capital. So to raise the funds that you actually require takes a whole lot, and you need, I guess, a team and a track record. And I think when I think back to 3 years ago when we started with the unlisted fund, We had the advantage of having the capital, which we could use as equity, but we still needed to get the debt funding for most of our transactions. And when we were actually doing that, the commercial banks were not very warm in terms of, were not very welcoming in terms of funding healthcare, because it's not like your typical transaction where you know you've got a buyer. I mean, you need to work on, you know, people are going to get sick, they've got medical aid and all of that. So it took a whole lot for us to actually convince them to get them to give us the debt funding. And I think we've made good strides. We 3 years into it now, and we've got banks knocking at our doors to
Now they want to talk to you, of course.
Yes, now they actually do want to talk to us. So, I mean, we've made good progress there.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, in the last minute or two for each of you, please, one question that I always ask all people that come to studio. This is your opportunity to do a pay it forward moment. What do you know now that you did not know when you started out in business, that if you had heard back then on a radio station like ours, what is the one thing that you would like to give a future entrepreneur? A pay it forward moment. The good old pay it forward. What is the one thing that you would say, hey, remember this or think about that, and it's going to take away pain from somebody else?
I think for me, the biggest thing I've learned in the last year, Sophia, is understanding how your own personal values also, you know, form your business values, and how, you know, ultimately the clients that you seek, rather, or the clients that you're going to find you've got very good relationships with, are the ones where the values don't clash. Because I've had to really do a lot of introspection at some point, you know, where I had relationships that were not working, only to realize that there was a value clash. So early on, learn about your own personal values and what they are, and know that that is what's going to become fundamentally, you know, the foundation of your business.
Okay, great.
I think for me, it's networking. I think generally as women, we find it very difficult to network and we take it for granted. But for you to get anywhere in business, you actually need the networking. You need to create useful partnerships. And I think you just need to understand that not everyone is going to like your story. Certain people are going to like your story. Certain people are going to criticize your story and never believe in it. But just keep believing in what you want and follow through.
Mm-hmm. Follow through, believe in yourself.
Yes. And I think that's a very important thing, especially probably for all entrepreneurs, but specifically for women, is when someone, that one person, doesn't believe in your story, you make it so universal and you start to doubt yourself.
Yes,
and
you
that's
do.
Such an important thing to not succumb to.
Well, it does happen. You start to doubt yourself, but the key thing is doubt yourself and wake up the next day and still continue.
Well, Kazi Level, thank you very much. It's been great chatting to you. It's been great learning a little bit more about you and about your businesses. Some great insights from today's interview. Thank you very much for your time. Really appreciate it being here.
Thank you, Richard.
Next up, our youth leadership platform.
This is CliffCentral.com.